Hey, I'm Chris.
What's up? I'm Mars.
And you're listening to Surgery Shelf Prep.
Today, we're diving deep into the chest, focusing on some high-yield thoracic trauma baddies that can really throw a wrench in your patient stay and your shelf score. Thoracic trauma, for real, accounts for 10% of all trauma admissions and a whopping 20% of all trauma deaths, so knowing this stuff cold is crucial.
You got that right, Mars. If the stem hints at patient decompensation, you gotta act first and image later. No cap, save a life, then get the pics.
Totally. Remember, airway, breathing, circulation, disability, and exposure. Any change in a patient's status means you're reevaluating starting from the top.
All right, let's kick it off with the sternal fracture. What's the typical scoop on how these patients show up, Mars?
The classic presentation is a patient with a steering wheel bruise or just focal sternal tenderness and bruising after blunt impact like a motor vehicle crash. But here's the kicker. While the fracture itself is a direct compression injury, it has a strong association with underlying cardiac contusion and even more concerning, blunt aortic injury.
That's the real trap right there. The pitfall is assuming it's benign and while missing that sneaky underlying aortic tear. So how do we diagnose and treat this?
For diagnosis, you'll want a lateral chest x-ray or even better, a CT chest. Treatment is mostly supportive with aggressive analgesia, but you absolutely cannot sleep on the cardiac workup. We're talking EKG and troponins to evaluate for blunt cardiac injury. And if that EKG looks abnormal, you better be getting a bedside echocardiogram.
So, question for the docs in training, what are the two most critical associated injuries to look out for with a sternal fracture? Hint, we already mentioned them.
If you said cardiac contusion and blunt aortic injury, you're on the right track.
All right, next up, let's talk traumatic pneumomediastinum. Mars, tell us, what does this look like when a patient rolls in?
Picture this. Patient comes in after a blast injury or even the severe vigorous cough. You might see subcutaneous emphysema, which feels like Rice Krispies crackling under the skin, especially in the neck or chest. They might also complain of a muffled voice. It's essentially air that's escaped into the mediastinum, the space in your chest containing your heart, great vessels, and trachea.
That's the Macklin effect in action, fam. It's when there's an alveolar rupture and air dissects along the bronchovascular sheath. But remember, this may also be a sign of a tracheal or esophageal injury. So how do we spot it on imaging and what's the game plan for treatment?
A standard chest x-ray will often show mediastinal streaks, which is like your first clue. To confirm it and get a better look, you're going to want a CT scan and you can see air in the mediastinum. But if there is concern for esophageal injury, you're going to want a gastrographin esophagram. If there is concern for a tracheal injury, the patient will need a bronchoscopy. Once diagnosed, the initial management is straightforward, high flow oxygen and observation. However, here's a major pitfall. You must rule out tracheal and esophageal perforation first.
These are major concerns in trauma patients, though esophageal and tracheal injuries are rare. If the pneumomediastinum is from an alveolar rupture, then monitor for pneumothorax, but the treatment is oxygen and observation. If you identify an esophageal injury, then these patients typically need surgery, though the procedure is usually dependent on the level of contamination and location of the injury. These patients are at high risk for mediastinitis. Tracheal injuries are first treated by securing the airway, but definitive treatment is surgery. Wild stuff. So, quick check for the crew. If you suspect traumatic pneumomediastinum and the patient complains of dysphagia, what's the next crucial diagnostic step before discharge?
You got it. A swallowing study to rule out esophageal perforation.
All right, let's hit the big one, the heavy hitter, the ultimate life-saving move in the emergency department. Resuscitative thoracotomy. This ain't for the faint of heart. These are heroic measures. Historical note, Princess Diana and Tupac both had thoracotomies for trauma.
Truth. It's primarily indicated for patients who experience traumatic arrest. We're talking blunt trauma arrest 10 minutes from arrival to the ED, penetrating traumatic arrest 15 minutes from arrival to the ED. The overall survival is extremely poor for blunt trauma, so some physicians only perform resuscitative thoracotomy for blunt trauma when there is a witnessed arrest in the ED.
That's a tough situation, and indications are evolving.
Beyond traumatic arrest scenarios, resuscitative thoracotomies can also be considered for massive hemothorax, which means an initial chest tube output of more than 1,500 milliliters of blood or persistent bleeding greater than 200 milliliters per hour for 3 hours. Other triggers include suspected cardiac tamponade or profound refractory shock that isn't responding to other resuscitative measures.
Crucially, this is a clinical diagnosis. There's no time for imaging delays, no sending the patient for a CT. That's a trap that can lead to pulseless electrical activity arrest on the table. The procedure involves a left anterolateral thoracotomy, which might extend to a clamshell incision, which means you carry the thoracotomy to the right chest and open up the patient like a clam so you see both lungs and the mediastinum and great vessels. Inside, you're looking to cross-clamp the descending aorta to shunt blood to the brain and heart, open the pericardium to relieve cardiac tamponade, and perform internal cardiac massage or shocking if there is V-fib.
If the patient receives cardiac activity and a pulse, then you move them to the OR.
That's some serious action. Now let's top off thoracic trauma with some high-yield facts to melt your brain. One, sternal fractures are a red flag for underlying cardiac contusion or blunt aortic injury. Always pursue EKG, troponins, and potentially an echo. Two, traumatic pneumomediastinum requires ruling out tracheal or esophageal perforation, especially if the patient has dysphagia, via a swallowing study with contrast. Three, resuscitative ED thoracotomy is for patients with traumatic arrest, with poor outcomes for those patients who arrest from blunt trauma. Four, massive hemothorax is defined by over 1,500 milliliters of blood on initial chest tube insertion, or over 200 milliliters per hour for 3 hours, often necessitating a thoracotomy. Five, resuscitative thoracotomy initially treats pneumothorax, cardiac tamponade, and bleeding below the diaphragm by cross-clamping the aorta in the chest. While in the chest, surgeons can address other issues, but those are the big three.
Keep crushing it, first-year surgeons. We out.
Peace.